the profile of a despondent-looking man in a flat cap. He stands on rocks with the sea beginning to wash up over them. Lee Evans. The History of Mr. Polly. The man removes his hands from his jacket pockets, looks up above him, then slaps his hands against the sides of his thighs in a despairing manner. Anne-Marie Duff and Julie Graham. Standing at the foot of a steep cliff, the man, who's slender and aged about 40, removes his flat cap and paces within a short range. He appears agitated. Based on the novel by H.G. Wells. Screenplay by Adrian Hodges. Producer, Catherine Lannan. The man clutches his folded cap in his hand and continues to pace and look tormented. Spray fountains up and crashes close to him. A silver ribbon of light glints off the grey sea. Director, Gillies McKinnon. His back to the cliff, the man sits down on the rocks and talks to himself.
You're a fool, Alfred Polly. You wanted a life and you settled for just a living.
Alfred wears a wing collar and blue spotted tie.
Yeah, why not? Life's insured.
He stares down as he ponders.
Life is insured?
Miriam won't miss me. She'd be better off.
Need no much. One quick flick of the razor. Over and done with.
He smiles triumphantly. Then frowns and ponders again.
I'll kill myself.
At home, Alfred picks up an open cutthroat razor which is next to an oil lamp. He carries the lit lamp over to a table full of documents, puts the lamp down, then studies a framed black and white photo on a wall. The image is of a smiling man and boy. The boy is dressed as Napoleon.
How did it ever come to this? Might have been all right once. Might have been happy.
A flashback. The photo is taken. Easewood, Kent, 1880. A young Alfred sits on a doorstep.
Stargazing won't get you far in life, Alfred.
But there's so many. Look, there's Orion, the hunter with his dogs. Those three stars are called Alni Tak, Alni Lam, and Mintaka. They make up Orion's belt. And the other fainter stars are his sword.
You look all you want.
His father, who wears a flat cap and carries a leather bag over his shoulder, ruffles Alfred's hair and steps inside the pleasant-looking stone cottage. He goes to kiss his wife, then Alfred goes to hug his mother. At school, an elderly teacher writing the alphabet on a blackboard notices Alfred secretly reading a book hidden beneath his desk. The teacher smashes his cane down on Alfred's desk, making the boy jump. Alfred offers his book, which the teacher snatches and studies.
I like words, sir.
Can't beat the facts in. We can beat the daydreaming out.
Alfred holds out his palm. He flinches as the teacher canes his hand. Night. Alfred sits reading on a chair in the doorway of the cottage. Day. In class, a boy brings a note to the teacher. The smartly dressed, silver-haired teacher takes the note, nods for the boy to take his place in class, then opens the folded sheet of paper and reads.
Ollie. Come to the front.
Alfred, who's aged about 9 with neat hair and clothes, puts down his pen and approaches the teacher's desk.
Your mother's been ill.
Alfred nods.
Sorry to say that she is dead.
Alfred looks stunned, then lowers his eyes.
In the circumstances, you may go home early today.
Alfred bows his head and weeps. Stars shine brightly. Alfred sits on the cottage doorstep, looking up at them. His father arrives home.
Nothing better to do than sit and look at the stars. When are you ever going to grow up? You think life's an holiday? Well, you'll soon know better.
He slaps Alfred's head as he steps over him, then knocks his wife's rocking chair as he passes it. Alfred stares at the empty chair. 14 years later. In a gentleman's outfitters, Alfred gazes adoringly at a pretty young woman as she places a top hat on a stand, then slips from the ladder she's on. Alfred catches her.
Save me! How strong you are, Mr. Polly.
Oh, please, call me Alfred.
Gloves, Polly.
What?
Gloves, Polly.
Huh?
He wakes from his chivalrous daydream. The manager holds a book.
In gentleman's outfitting.
National poet, Mr. Mansfield. Eloquent verbo juice. Cisco Medallion Articulariosnis.
You need to pull your socks up. Forward, Polly. Look sharp.
Looking flustered, Alfred picks up boxes from the counter and scurries off through the shop. Two young girls are skipping in the narrow alleyway leading to the cottage. They stop briefly to let Alfred by. He's wearing a suit, a waistcoat, and wing-collared shirt with a patterned tie, topped off by his squashy flat cap. Arriving at the cottage door, he hesitates before knocking. He removes his cap. Mr. Johnson, a gaunt man in funereal garb, opens up.
Cousin Alfred, you'd best prepare yourself.
Johnson nods Alfred inside, where his father is laid out in his coffin, his face peaceful.
Your father took to his bed with a poorly stomach. The doctor said it was all in his imagination.
He put appendicitis on the death certificate, though.
He never complained. He was really quite cheerful at the end.
He was never what you'd call happy.
Alfred gazes down at him.
Time a bit.
He continues staring into the coffin.
It's over.
His father's eyes suddenly open.
You think life's an holiday? Well, you'll soon know better.
His eyes close again. Alfred looks shocked by his vision.
You can't let your father go to his grave without asking a few friends. You don't want a crowd. Just the immediate relations.
He hated our relations.
Cold ham and chicken's very suitable for the supper.
Funereal baked meats?
Not baked. You don't want a lot of cooking with the ceremony in the middle of it.
Tears glisten in Alfred's eyes.
But you gotta put them away somehow.
Alfred moves nearer the coffin, and a tear rolls down his cheek.
I should have picked him up a bit more when he was alive.
His father lies waxen faced.
Sorry.
Here's your Aunt Larkins.
I should have known him anywhere.
Oh, good mother.
Oh, she never set eyes on him before. And these are your cousins. Here's Annie.
Annie kisses Alfred.
That's Mimi.
Another kiss.
There's Miriam.
An elegant young woman.
It's Uncle Benstamon.
Have you nailed him down yet?
I have.
You always were a little ahead of what was needful.
Why, it's Mr. Bones!
Come to pay my respects, Mrs. Johnson. Like a good Christian. Sad business.
Alfred, whose ears stick out a little, stands looking bemused.
These girls look well in black.
Vules trots to Miriam. He kisses her. He kisses Annie.
There's a lovely girl.
Then Minnie.
The loveliest Larkin of all.
Mother. She gets a kiss. Vules spots the food. Annie and Minnie box Alfred in.
Alfred.
I'm on a squeeze.
As Miriam reaches for food, Alfred glances at her, then looks down bashfully. Pallbearers carry the coffin. The mourners follow.
You're a puny young chap. Clerk, are you? Outfitter. These two pretend to be dressmakers.
They are dressmakers.
Will they all to it? Does they go out to work in a factory?
I won't have my girl spoken about, not by nobody, young or old.
Oh, that sherry's rising. Must be grocer stuff, I reckon.
Lord, I should have been back at the shop 3 days ago. There'd be no end of a row.
You are a one. You'll get the chuck.
So what if I do?
I'll die. I don't believe you care a bit.
Minnie and Annie each slot an arm through his. Alfred glances at blonde Miriam, who smiles and lowers her eyes. The mourners gather round as the pallbearers, using ropes, lower the coffin into the grave. The minister waits.
I am the resurrection and the life, saith the Lord. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, he actually lived.
The men remove their top hats.
Whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die.
Miriam glances at Alfred.
Therefore commit the body of William Polly to the ground. Earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. In the sure and certain hope of the resurrection of eternal life.
Amen.
Miriam takes Alfred's hand briefly, then lets it go. Alfred looks stunned. He stares down as soil is thrown into the grave. Night. Alfred reads a document in the cottage with Johnson.
Insurance? £350, including his savings. All yours.
So I'm rich.
Well, not rich, exactly. But it's a tidy sum. There's no end of things you could do with £350. There's building societies for one thing.
Well, I'm no sort of financier.
Then you might do worse than put it into a small shop. For a man who sticks to it, there's a lot to be done in a shop.
I'll give it some thought. Weigh up my options.
There's a gentleman's outfitters down the way. Might be just a thing. Very nice situation.
Outfitters.
Stick with what you know. That's my motto. After all, you can't stay on holiday forever. Shall I inquire about the lease?
All in good time, old man. All in good time.
Day. Alfred, wearing a straw boater and smart suit, cycles merrily through leafy woodland. He laughs to himself, then sees an old man in his path. The old man dodges him. Alfred, wobbling on his wheels, descends a steep bank and comes to a path sign in a leafy, sun-dappled glade. Right to Stampton, or straight on to Hartbury. Alfred gets off his bike and looks about him blankly. He opts for Stampton. Putting his left foot on a pedal, he pushes with his right foot to gain momentum, then swings a leg over and gets back in the saddle. Alfred pulls up and knocks at a door which is framed by foliage. Miriam opens up and looks horrified.
Cousin Alfred!
Exploratious meanderings. I thought I'd look you up.
She slams the door in his face. Miriam opens up again, beaming.
Oh, I didn't know you rode a bicycle. Hmm? How bright it is.
It's plated.
Plated? Fancy. Here's my cleaning up day. I'm not a bit tidy, but I do like to have a go at things now and then. They'd leave everything if I let them. I am glad to see you again.
I couldn't keep away. I had to come and see my pretty cousins again.
Do say things.
I won't say which of them.
He winks at her clumsily and looks bashful.
You better come in. What will Ma think of standing out here talking on the doorstep? She'll get ideas.
They both look awkward for a moment, then Alfred wheels his bicycle inside the house. Alfred has tea with his cousins. They jostle for position.
Sponge cake, Alfred. Would you like a sandwich? Cup of tea.
Thank you, Annie.
We are glad to see you again, Alfred.
Oh, well, it's good to be here.
It was a lovely funeral. I can't remember the last time I enjoyed myself so much.
And some rings, Annie.
Oh, thank you. Got them out of the prize packet.
Prize packet in trousers, I shouldn't wonder.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean. It means, have you got an admirer, Annie? I don't have no admirer.
Some people have been remiss about their chances.
They haven't had any chances. I don't believe in making myself too free with people. Not like some I could mention.
She glares at Minnie, who looks offended. He tosses sugar lumps into his tea. Miriam laughs and smiles coyly. Miriam rings his bell.
Let me give you your jacket. Here you go. Oh, Minnie, mind out of the way. Oh.
come and see us again soon, won't you, Al?
Minnie and Annie wave Alfred off. Night. Alfred sits at home, his chin propped on an upright closed book that he's holding. He stares ahead pensively, then gets up and studies himself in a mirror. Day. Dressed in his smart suit and boater again, Alfred cycles up to the path sign in the glade. He turns right to Stamton, then stops. He gets off his bike, wheels it backwards, and considers for a moment, then steers a wobbly course for Hartbury instead. Alfred cycles off a track and onto a narrow road. His speed drops and his pedalling becomes laboured as the road becomes steeper. The slower he gets, the more his front wheel wobbles, and despite his grim look of determination, he eventually keels over to one side. He lands in ferns that border a high wall beside the road. After a moment, he struggles up and, with the bicycle upright again, looks about him. He lays the bike on its side in the ferns again, then, looking shattered, walks a little way down the road and sits on a stone. Hearing the noise, he turns and looks up to see a pretty blonde young woman climbing over the high wall from the other side.
Goodness. Sorry.
Please wait.
He gets up.
I'm intradacious.
I thought you might be a teacher. The wood is out of bounds, you see. In term time, anyway. But it is the holidays.
Well, come down then. Holidays are different.
She's sitting on top of the wall.
I think I'll stay on the wall, so long as some of me's in bounds.
I was just sitting here in melancholic retrospectatiousness.
You talk in a most peculiar way. It's sweet.
She studies him closely.
Shouldn't you be at work?
Holidays? I might go back to work next month. I might leave it till next year.
Gosh, you must be rich.
Worth hundreds.
My parents have got thousands. They own India. Well, most of it.
You make me feel like one of those chivalrous old knights that rode around looking for dragons and beautiful maidens.
Why?
Beautiful maiden, up there in your tower. And here I am.
A twig for a sword. He jumps into the road.
Steel, ready to obsquatulate all the dragons.
Alfred fights off a dragon with his twig, then falls into the foliage wounded. He springs up again.
Rescue you. Run away with me.
But we don't even know each other's names. I suppose yours must be Gawain or Galahad.
Alfred.
I can't possibly call you Sir Alfred.
Well, Polly, then.
That's a girl's name.
I wish it were. One particular girl, anyway. Yours is the prettiest name in the world.
How do you know?
Bound to be.
It is rather pretty. It's Christabel.
I knew it. There is love at first sight.
The dragons.
Christabel hurries back over the wall.
Tonight. You may come again tomorrow.
Back at home, Alfred takes a volume from a small, higgledy-piggledy bookcase. It's a book he read as a boy. He sits and opens it at a page with an illustration of a knight and a maiden. Alfred studies it intently, then looks up with an animated expression. Next day, Alfred cycles at full pelt down a path through grassland and into the woods. He heads for Hartbury. Christabel sits on top of the school wall, swinging her legs. She wears boots, a long blue skirt with a white pe- and a high-collared white blouse. Her long blonde hair cascades about her shoulders. Alfred wheels his bike to the spot.
Kind sir, you may kiss a finger.
She offers her hand.
A lady never breaks her promise to her faithful knight.
He kisses her hand.
Christabel, will you wait a year or two for me? You're just a girl yet. I mean, it won't be hard.
Speak on, Sir Knight.
I've been dilettanting about until now, but I could work, make something of the money I've got. I'll stop trifling and shirking.
Don't. Please don't. Don't go on like this. You're different. and being the knight with his fair lady.
But I'm not a knight. I'm just a human man. One who loves you more than anything in the world.
You're not being funny anymore.
I'm laying my heart at your feet.
A tart? Why a tart?
Not a tart, you nitwit. His heart.
Christabel looks guilty.
You've got someone back there.
She goes back over the wall. Alfred climbs the wall and peers over to see two other girls. Christabel struggles with one, then seeing Alfred, they run off. Losing his grip, Alfred falls from the wall and back onto his bicycle. He lies groaning, his cheek cut.
Bloody fool!
He bashes his head with both fists.
Forgotten us. Oh, come in.
Mrs. Larkins pulls him in by the arm, but Alfred steps back to get his bike and wheels it inside. In the kitchen, Mrs. Larkins stares at him.
What have you been doing to your face?
Bit of a scrape on the bicycle.
Oh. You might have stopped me going out with a neck with a broken handle. I've been cutting my bleeding fingers all the way home. Alfred.
Miriam, looking a little flustered.
Where have you been all this time? You found a shop yet?
One or two likely ones. I don't want to be too precipitous.
Like choosing a husband. I kept Larkins hesitating for 2 years, I did. I hope my girls keep their men waiting when the time comes.
Your face. All rough it is. Come here.
Miriam gets close to him.
Cold creamed.
Their eyes lock. Alfred's are big and round.
Why not?
Why not what?
Why not buy a shop?
You've been saying that for weeks.
I could be happy in a shop. If I had the right company.
He sits, boater in hand.
A cat in the window. Tabby. Cat's no good if it's not a tabby.
Oh, I like cats. I'm always saying to Ma, I wish we had a cat.
And a canary. Can a canary. Seem to go. I should sit at breakfast, sun streaming through the window, cat on a chair, canary singing, Mrs. Polly frying up a bit of bacon.
Mrs. Polly, and who shall she be?
A figment of the imagination. Put in to fill the picture, no face to figure is, yeah?
You will have it nice.
Oh, rather.
Ding-a-ling.
Shop. Smart little shop. Counter, desk, all complete.
I wonder you don't set about it right off.
Well, I mean to get it exactly right.
Well, I shall have a cat first. You never mean anything you say.
I might get him together. Shop, cat and canary all thrown in.
You mean shop, cat and Mrs. Polly?
He looks panicked.
Oh, eat me bicycle tyre.
He rushes to his bicycle in the hallway and lifts it up with a struggle. Miriam follows. And he puts the bike down.
Can't fool me, bike was on fire. Little dog.
There ain't a little dog anywhere.
No.
You're a rum one, ain't you? Was all that just talk about the shop then?
No, not a bit of it.
You were saying something about the right sort of company.
Oh, I should get that all right. In fact, I've got my eye on someone right this minute.
Oh, well.
You and me, in your little shop, Miriam. I mean, who does this?
You don't mean you're in love with me?
Of course.
I didn't dream you cared. First I thought Annie, then Minnie.
Oh, no, I always liked you better than them.
Well, I loved you, Alfred, ever since I first met you at your poor father's funeral. Leastways, I would have done, only you never seemed to mean anything you said. I can't believe it.
Not me.
She kisses him on the cheek. He responds, but misses her. She frowns and ponders. Miriam then smiles knowingly. Alfred stands in church, a carnation in his buttonhole, Johnson's behind him.
I can't help feeling you've been rash, old man. Still, with luck, it might turn out for the best.
Mrs. Larkins weeps as Vools escorts Miriam in.
Take her from here!
Annie and Minnie are bridesmaids. Vools grins at Alfred.
Shake of Bristol fashion.
Your department now.
Alfred looks terrified. He turns and looks at Miriam, whose face morphs into that of Christabel.
What a silly man you are.
Christabel becomes Miriam again. They face the minister.
Dear beloved, we are gathered here in the sight of God, in the faithless congregation, join together this mad woman in holy matrimony, which is a horrible state, instituted by God. Wilt thou love her, comfort her, honour her, and keep her, in sickness and in health?
Alfred looks to Johnson.
I will.
Alfred looks back at the minister and stares at him. The minister blinks like an owl and returns Alfred's gaze. Miriam sighs and looks relieved. Outside the church in sunshine, the handful of people attending the wedding throw rice at the newlyweds. Mrs. Larkins sobs into a hanky. Miriam and her sisters go to comfort her. Uncle Pensterman watches them and talks to Alfred.
You don't know what you got till you get some old grizzlers. That's the worst. If ever I had a grizzler, I'd out and pick some of it up and hit her on the head with it. A bit sharp. Anyway, I think I'd like to wish you good luck. Because you'll need it.
Vools. Vools does his rounds of kissing. Pretty Miriam in grey silk dress and flowery hat approaches Alfred.
Hi, Mr. Polly.
She smiles. He looks uneasy.
Convivial vociferations.
You need to stop that peculiar way of talking now. They won't do in a shop. Oh!
Rice falls from her hat brim.
Rice Uncle Vools must have bought pounds and pounds of it.
Alfred in top hat stares at her awkwardly.
Kiss me then.
He gazes at her uncertainly, checks about him edgily, then launches himself at her lips. Miriam recoils.
Money out.
She looks annoyed. Alfred looks embarrassed. The newlyweds sit in the back of a pony and trap, facing the onlookers, who throw rice at them as they're driven away up a narrow, leafy lane. Fishbourne, Kent. Two shops look onto a pokey cobbled square. One has a sign which reads, Rumbold's Hardware and China. Alfred excitedly leads Miriam down an alleyway between Rumbold's and the other shop, a gentleman's outfitter's, which has banners outside which read, Polly's for Price and Grand Opening Soon.
It's rather small. And a bit out of the way. There won't be much passing trade.
No way. You'll have to beat them back with a stick. When they see my new stock, there'll be no old.
It all came to a lot of money.
It's the height of London fashion.
Fishbourne isn't London. Whatever made you choose it, I wish you'd asked me first.
I just had a fancy for it. Morning.
He addresses a couple of men outside the hardware store.
It's a good place to do business. And new lives. Bacon for breakfast. Muffins for tea and long walks in the country of a Sunday morning.
It doesn't look well to go traipse in the country on Sundays.
She brushes his suit. Alfred spots the hardware men looking at them and steals a kiss from her.
What? It's none of their business.
The hardware men are still looking. Alfred picks Miriam up.
If you must, please let me ask her, Miriam.
Sorry.
He staggers over the threshold, then puts her down. The glass-paned shop door closes behind them. Miriam goes to look around while Alfred straightens two top hats which are sitting on stands on a counter. In a corridor, Miriam looks up a flight of stairs, then goes back into the shop.
Too many stairs. And the coal bin indoors will mean a lot of work.
I never thought of that.
This will show the dirt summit fearful.
I suppose it'll be all right with a bit of a clean.
She picks up a mop and bucket.
I'll soon have it put to rights.
On a rocky beach, Alfred jumps with joy. He trots in a circle round Miriam as they stroll.
It's bracing, isn't it?
The wind cuts right through you.
Come here. I'll keep warm.
Here, there's a time and place for that. And I've got a blister.
You'll soon walk it off.
Turn it septic more like.
She stops walking.
I'm going back. What's the point in walking if you're not going anywhere?
Holding her frilly skirts out to one side with one hand, Miriam limps away using her rolled umbrella as a cane. Alfred turns to look at the sea, then follows Miriam. Her hat blows off, and he runs to pick it up. He returns it to her. Alfred, wearing a smart dark suit, wing collar and patterned tie, stands in his shop doorway, aimlessly winding thread onto a bobbin. He looks over at a fat man, Mr. Rumbold, who adds a crate to the many items outside his shop. Rumbold has a droopy moustache.
Never did much for business.
He turns away and bends over to look in the crate, presenting his large backside.
Delicious commerciality.
Miriam watches Alfred touting for business outside the shop.
Cycling suit, sir. £1.15. Sir, I just wonder, do you want a new suit, sir? Because we're doing free fittings at the moment, not machine made, by hand, you know.
To a man looking in the shop window.
Anything particularly you're looking for, sir? Nice new pair of trousers? How about a whole new suit? Free fittings at the moment. New cap. That looks replacing, doesn't it?
The man walks off. 2 years later. Rumbold's large backside is pointed in Alfred's direction as he delves among items outside his hardware shop. Alfred sighs grumpily and walks back towards his shop.
Beastly hole.
What was that, Polly?
Rumbold turns to look at Alfred, who grunts and slouches inside. Alfred reads while Miriam cleans the shop.
How many customers in the pages of a book?
You can't oblige a chap to buy a pair of flannel trousers.
You got no get up and go. Need one thin.
He's forced to move as she mops vigorously round the chair he's sitting on. Alfred sits looking at a runny boiled egg and a plate of burnt toast. Next, a plate of burnt meat and veg on it. Then a plate with two dry-looking fish, which he sniffs.
It's a nice bit of mackerel, that.
Might have been once.
You can't say it isn't cooked.
It's done all right.
Miriam smiles proudly at her efforts. Alfred stands in his shop doorway, looking mesmerised as he stares up at the stars.
Lay the heat down!
He hurries inside. 3 years later, Alfred stands at his shop door. Rumbold's buttocks are facing him.
Gracious animals. Man alone raises his face to the sky. Oh, man, why avert it?
Hey?
Alfred approaches Rumbold.
I'm sick of you turning your back on me. It is an ordinary civility.
Rumbold straightens up and faces him.
Packed with straw blowing in my eyes.
Yeah, but you needn't do it like a pig rooting for truffles, need you?
You calling me a pig?
I'm asking you civilly to stop unpacking with your back to me.
Pig ain't civil and you ain't sober.
Rumbold turns away and bends over again. Alfred makes to kick his backside, but thinks better of it. Alfred stamps and storms back to his shop. Night. Alfred and Miriam sit having dinner. They face each other across a table. She eats daintily but heartily, he unenthusiastically. An oil lamp casts gloomy light in the room where plates are displayed on a dresser. Alfred scans about with a bored air, then eats another morsel and begins to chew with difficulty. Day. Alfred's on his bicycle. He swerves to avoid children and ploughs into Rumbold's goods outside the shop.
Careful! What you doing?
All over the pavement as if the town belonged to you.
Safe! You're gonna pay for all this damage!
If anyone's paying, it's you. Compensation for injuries sustained.
Look at my butt! Oh!
Alfred elbows Rumbold, who's grabbed him, then Rumbold snatches his collar, which comes adrift. Rumbold waves it in Alfred's face, then throws it on the floor and grinds it with his foot. Alfred lets his bicycle drop and hurls himself at Rumbold, who's considerably larger than himself. Alfred wrestles him to the ground but is dragged off by onlookers. Miriam watches grimly from the shop doorway. Alfred struggles free from two men holding him, takes off his cap, and with an angry and defiant look faces Rumbold, who's on his feet again. Alfred points at him.
You will hear of me through a summons. Human life ain't safe with you.
Yours isn't at any rate. Hey.
Onlookers nod in support.
You're just a load of shopkeepers.
Rumbold looks down his nose at Alfred, who goes to pick up his bicycle. He glares at Rumbold, then wheels his bicycle back to the shop.
You're always making an exhibition of yourself. Why can't you just rub along like everyone else?
She stomps inside. Later, Miriam scrubs the shop floor on her knees.
I'm just having a bit of a turnout.
Alfred carries a stack of hat boxes past her.
There's cold pork for your tea. And Rashtel's mixed pickles. It's your favourite.
He sighs despondently to himself behind a door and shuts it. Tea time. Alfred reluctantly eats a forkful of food. Miriam glares.
What's up with you?
Bit of acid.
That's perfectly good pork.
I never said it wasn't.
You looked at me.
You used to like that. Me looking at you.
No time for your silliness.
He gets up from the table.
Where's me at?
Where are you going?
Walk.
You do better keeping the shop open.
No customers. Where's me bloody hat?
He tosses things around as he searches.
It was here this morning. Nothing ever stays where it's put in this house.
She finds his flat cap.
Here's your hat.
Not this old thing, me new one. I suppose you'd like me to wear this silly mud pie forever, wouldn't you? Well, I won't.
Tantrums. I haven't patience.
She sits down at the table again.
You got a shop. Most men would be pleased.
I'm not most men. I'm me.
Well, you should have told me that before you married me, shouldn't you? Some people might call it false pretenses. No!
She finds the new hat and throws it down. Day in the shop below their dwelling. Alfred reads a typed letter.
Bankruptcy proceedings.
Alfred reaches for his jacket and talks to himself in a coat stand mirror.
Tends to get your hair cut until it's too long. You blighted, degenerated paintbrush. Oh, what a sight.
He slaps on his mud pie flat cap and storms out of the shop. Back to the profile of a despondent looking Alfred as he stands on rocks with the sea beginning to wash up over them. Alfred removes his hands from his jacket pockets, looks up above him, then slaps his hands against the sides of his thighs in a despairing manner. Alfred sits down at the foot of the cliff behind him.
Hey, why not? Life's insured. Place is insured. Miriam won't miss me. She'd be better off. Need not much. One quick flick of the razor. Over and done with.
Back at home, Alfred sniffs a boiled egg with the top cut off it. Miriam enters wearing a dark hat and dress.
You're coming to church?
Rather. Haven't I got a lot to be thankful for?
You got what you deserve.
Suppose I have. You'll be all right.
He rests his hand on hers. She flips it away with a dismissive look and hurries downstairs. Alfred lowers his eyes despondently. Night. Alfred opens the shop door and puts a cat out. Inside the shop, Alfred takes coats on hangers off rails and throws the clothes down. Moving on, he sweeps boxes off shelves and onto the floor. Alfred rips a sheet of brown paper off a huge roll and throws that down. He works desperately, flinging the rest of the shop onto the floor. Alfred hurriedly shakes paraffin from a can over the shop floor. He then goes upstairs to the living quarters, dousing the carpet with paraffin as he goes. Alfred stands holding an open cutthroat razor. He takes a lit paraffin lamp and puts it on a table full of documents. Alfred's profile is in silhouette as he stares at the photograph of himself and his father, both of them smiling happily, Alfred wearing the Napoleon uniform proudly.
Why did I always stumble into things? Submit to everything.
Reflections of Alfred's miserable face.
I never insist on the things that were beautiful. Never sought that. Never fought for it. Taken any risks for it. Died rather than abandon it. These are the things that matter. What is a life unless there are things to live for?
Standing in gloomy light, Alfred stares down wretchedly. Still staring down, he nods to himself. His brow furrowed in an anguished expression, Alfred takes a match from out of a box. His hand holding the match hovers over the striker panel on the side of the box. Alfred holds the lit match for a moment, then drops it on the floor. Flames burst into life and run down the stairs. Alfred picks up the cutthroat razor. He goes over to a mirror, holds the blade to his neck, then draws it across his flesh. He clasps his neck. Alfred throws down the razor, then tries to stamp out the flames which are engulfing the room. In the shop, Alfred swipes at flames with a jacket. A frock coat on a stand starts to burn. Alfred struggles to open the shop door. He wrenches the door open and staggers out from the flames and smoke. The shop is opposite the fire station.
Fire! Fire!
He sees the fire beginning to spread next door.
Death! Call the fire brigade!
A fireman rings the bell. A fireman gambled to another man, Rusper.
Who's got the key?
Where's Mr. Rumble?
Out visiting. Where's the bloody key?
Well, you always hang it next to the cellar door.
Well, it's not there now. Somebody must have borrowed it.
Alfred takes a running leap at the Rumbold's door.
He's not safe! He's got a man!
Mrs. Rumble! Mrs. Rumble!
Alfred charges upstairs.
No! You've got to get out!
You keep your hands to yourself. I'm a respectable widow woman.
No, you don't understand. The house is on fire.
Who are you calling a liar?
No, fire!
Fire? Why didn't you say so?
Miriam returns to see the entire shop and house ablaze. Mrs. Rumbold's at a window.
You've got to!
I ain't counting.
You've got to! Hold on while I give you your boots!
He pushes her.
Rumble! Oh! Cooey! Cooey!
Mother? Oh!
What's going on? What's happening?
Mother!
Oh! Oh, I'll sit here and rest. I'm not the girl I used to be.
They're now on the stairs.
And you're
pop like a chestnut.
What?
You want me? Roast chestnut. Chestnut. You're pop.
Chestnut? I ain't had any chestnut.
Oh, blimey, there ought to be a limit to deafness.
I heard that.
Alfred tries to prise her fingers from the banister.
Never have left her on her own.
There's no point tormenting yourself.
Count the stairs. One, two, three,
Flames spring up around them as Alfred helps Mrs. Rumbold downstairs. Her son is outside with Gamble and other onlookers.
They've both had it now.
Which?
More flames have leapt up. Alfred and Mrs. Rumbold burst out of a side door.
All I was ever in, and likely to be me last. It's an origin scurrying business. Something that I haven't missed it.
Nobody notices them join the onlookers.
She was a good woman, a saint.
Polly did his best, you've got to grant him that.
He's gone too. No one could have survived a blade like that.
They could, you know.
Not a chance, old man, not a chance. No point deluding ourselves.
I suppose not.
If only Mother were back with me now.
Here I am, Rambo.
Oh, it's a miracle!
They hug.
A wee mad word in the past, Polly, but I take them all back. I never understood you properly, that's plain. I never saw the inner man. Alfred, Polly is a hero. He deserves a medal!
Rumbold raises Alfred's arm like a referee would with a winning boxer. Miriam looks on in the smoke-filled night. Alfred is raised onto the crowd's shoulders and carried along through the street. The crowd gently deposits sooty-faced Alfred in front of Miriam.
Yes!
The crowd cheer as Miriam hugs Alfred to her. The Pollies are led into a hotel bar.
To your room.
Give this man a drink. No, you're not going anywhere.
Don't be long.
Get in that corner.
There we are.
Cheers.
They all sit in sumptuous leather chairs.
I was going up the stairs. I slipped on a tread. Over I went, upset the lamp, and the ass was aflare in a moment.
Could have happened to anyone.
I suppose there'll be a public subscription.
Not for those who are insured.
I'm with the Royal Salamander. Good firm. You insured, Polly?
Royal Phoenix. I'm all right.
It cleared me out of a lot of old stock. That's one good thing. There's one or two round here a bit sick if I didn't reach them.
Rumbold puts down his drink. Well,
good night.
Alfred puts down his drink and gets up. Miriam, wearing a night bonnet, lies awake in bed. Alfred enters the bedroom. He sits down and starts to undress. Miriam sits up and turns on an electric bedside lamp.
I've been thinking. We'll get your insurance and begin over again. Find a new position where there's more doing. Well, you want it stirring up.
His face still smudged with soot, Alfred considers.
We could go anywhere. Do anything.
What are you talking about?
Well, it's like a sign. This is our chance. We can just go. We're free.
Don't be soft.
We could see the gondolas in Venice. The pyramids in Egypt.
And then what?
I don't know. See where the road takes us.
The road? You're in shock. It's the fire. You'll get a good night's rest, and then you'll see sense.
No, I don't want to see sense. Not if it means being stuck in Fishbourne for the rest of me life. Don't you see, Miriam?
He sits beside her.
I've been living the wrong life.
The wrong life? With me?
I've not been much of an husband, but I can can make amends. Let's just pack our bags and go.
Oh, you're frightening me.
This is our chance.
All I want is a nice little house and a shop and a husband who works hard and he doesn't use fancy words and he isn't a bit out of the ordinary. It isn't too much to ask, is it?
Alfred looks resigned.
You're right. It's the shock talking. I'll be all right in the morning.
Miriam smiles through her tears.
No more gondoliers or pyramids.
Alfred shakes his head. Miriam pats his hand. Then she gets back beneath the sheets and turns on her side, her back facing him. Alfred turns away dejectedly. Day. Alfred stands on rocks with the sea rolling in around them. He stares out pensively from below the peak of his mud pie cap. He turns to face in a different direction and continues staring. Back in the hotel room, Alfred stares at the floor gloomily.
Just popping out for some air. Do you want anything?
No.
See you in a few minutes, then. Letter for Mr. Polly. Mr. Polly?
Miriam goes. The maid enters with the letter. The maid goes. Alfred slides the letter from its envelope and unfolds it. It's marked Phoenix Insurance. Alfred sighs deeply. There's a cheque for 400 guineas with the letter. Alfred puts the letter and cheque back in the envelope. He holds the envelope to his chin and considers for a moment, then puts it on the pillow of the made bed he's sitting on. Alfred returns to staring into space pensively. Men sit at tables outside the hotel. Alfred, a bag slung over his shoulder, strides out of the hotel and across the sunny square. He heads down the alleyway beside his former shop. Rumbold claps Alfred on the shoulder matily, but Alfred ignores him and strides on. Alfred climbs up rocks to a vantage point and looks out across lush, rolling countryside, over which silver-grey clouds hang in a pale blue sky. Swinging a walking stick and with his poacher-style bag slung across his back, Alfred strides across sunny, undulating grassland. He jumps down off a bank, and there's a jauntiness to his step as he proceeds along wooded hillside tracks. Arriving at a steep sandy bank, he scans around, then holds his stick out in front of him and spins round rapidly on the spot. He stops spinning and proceeds in the direction his stick is pointing. Alfred strides merrily across a hillside dotted with forest and foliage. On a woodland pathway, Alfred receives milk from a milkmaid. He takes a coin out of his pocket and tosses it in the air. He hands the coin to the milkmaid, who carries buckets of milk dangling from chains strung from a pole across her shoulders. Alfred waves and walks on. He buys bread. Alfred pays the street vendor and strides off merrily, putting a piece of the loaf in his mouth as he walks. In a bell tower, Alfred falls off a windowsill as the bell wakes him. Alfred jumps around and holds his hands against his ears. In an orchard, Alfred uses his stick to pull a branch down to pick a pear. He plucks it from the tree. Night. Alfred sits in a wood, looking up at the stars.
Wonder how Miriam's doing.
Alfred smiles.
Can't be helped. There's no going back now.
Alfred lies back on the ground, his arms behind his head. The next day, Alfred sits by a pond covered with a film of green algae and skims stones across it. A small Jack Russell runs towards him. Alfred pets the dog, whose tail is wagging furiously. Later, he walks through leafy woodland, the dog following after him. The little mutt, who's white with tan ears, runs over a plank bridge that runs across a narrow stream. Alfred follows him over it. It leads into the garden of a large stone building, the Potwell Inn, Sussex. An attractive dark-haired woman sits napping on a chair outside. She wakes as Alfred approaches.
Oh, Lord. Thought you was Jim.
Alfred looks around.
Jim.
I believe I was dozing. What can I do for you?
Cold meat.
There is cold meat. Boiled beef with new mustard and a bit of crisp lettuce.
And a tankard.
The woman smiles.
In a way.
The woman turns back to him.
Nancy Potter. Nan for short.
He removes his cap.
Alfred Polly.
I want an odd man about the place.
Well, I'm odd, all right. What are the wages?
Not much, but you get tips and pickings.
She regards him.
I had a sort of feeling it would suit you. You've got an half respectable look about you. I suppose you haven't done anything.
Bit of arson.
She smiles.
So long as you haven't the habit.
My first time, Mum, and my last.
It's all right if you haven't been to prison. It's not what a man's happened to do makes him truly bad. It's destroying his self-respect as the mischief. Have you been to prison? Nor a reformatory?
Do I look reformed?
Alfred sits down on a bench outside. Nan walks towards him.
You killed a chicken.
Nan points ahead. Alfred turns to see what she's pointing at, then stands up, looking thoughtful. Later, Alfred chases chickens around a shed, unsuccessfully trying to catch one of them. The birds flap their wings and scoot off whenever he gets near them. Alfred lunges for a white hen that's standing still, but lands in the hay empty-handed. He looks up to see a young girl standing over him.
What's your name?
Polly.
Liar, I'm Polly. It's my name.
Well, I was first. But you can call me Alfred. I'm the new odd job man, I think.
When Uncle Jim comes back and squeeze your eyeballs out and feed them to the fish, very likely he'll let me watch. Jonah came back a little time ago and he's scooted three men already. He'll scoot you too, I expect. Uncle Jim don't like strangers about the place. He's going to teach me to swear, all for good words, as soon as I can whistle and spit like a navvy. He says I'm the gamest little beast he's ever come across.
Alfred sits up with a worried frown. Nan's laying a table outside. Alfred strides up to her and holds out his hands.
Eggs.
Alfred grins at her triumphantly. Nan smiles and hands him a tankard. Alfred drinks from it thirstily.
Well, you drink well at any rate. You work as hard as you drink and we'll get along pretty well.
He wipes his mouth. Nan's face falls. She turns around and walks back inside. Alfred watches her go uneasily. Later, long blonde-haired Polly watches as Alfred attempts to chop a log. Alfred lifts up the axe and brings it down, but it hardly makes a dent. Alfred lifts the axe once more, the log now attached to it. Alfred loses his balance and crashes into the chicken coop. Nan and Polly stand in the garden, each holding a long pole. Alfred approaches carrying a larger, thicker pole and lays it down on the ground in front of them. A large beige tarpaulin is lying on the ground. Alfred crawls underneath it. Later, the thick pole holds up the tarpaulin, creating a marquee. Alfred and Nan use the two smaller poles to help prop it up. Polly watches as Alfred plays with the dog. The mutt has its teeth stuck into a ball. The dog lets go of the large ball. Alfred throws it onto the lawn and the dog chases after it. Its tail wagging, it takes it back to Alfred. Nan sits at a table outside the inn and watches. Alfred is fixing a wooden fence that's partially covered by the wild flowers and nettles that surround the pond. Nan walks over to him.
Jim's my sister's boy. He's the drawback to this place. But very likely he's gone.
Your little girl doesn't seem to think so.
Well, he ain't been seen in 2 weeks. I try not to think of it, but night and day's been haunting me. I'm that worried. I wouldn't mind so much if he'd leave that innocent child alone, but he goes talking to her, teaching her words and giving her ideas. There was always something a bit wrong with Jim. He stole. He was cruel to the hens and chickens. He stuck a knife in another boy at school. But then I've seen him be nice to a cat. No one could have been kinder.
Alfred stares at Nan. He shrugs slightly.
Biggest sort of man, is he?
Nan looks awkward.
Big enough. I give him money to keep him away, but he always wants more.
Nan looks despondent.
You better scoot now. It ain't reasonable to expect you to do anything else.
She looks down sadly.
Not one of your Hercules you saw. Nothing very wonderful by Sepetalee.
Alfred looks down at his hammer, then up at Nan.
You'll scoot. So you should.
You two ought to be left.
Nan, who started to walk away, stops and turns back.
Oh.
Nan stares at him gratefully. Alfred puts his cap back on and gives a confident nod, then turns back to the fence and continues with his hammering. Alfred points a rifle at a set of empty bottles. Polly stands nearby and watches. Alfred's blown off his feet by the force of the blast. He stands up and looks at Polly, who shakes her head and walks inside. Alfred walks over to the bottles. Not a single one has been broken. He sighs, disappointed. Another day, Alfred helps Nan serve her customers in the garden. Alfred takes some drinks over to a table, whilst Nan pours a cup of tea for a lady. Alfred places a drink down in front of one of the lady's companions. Nan smiles at him warmly as they pass. Later, Alfred and Polly sit by the pond, fishing.
You could teach me to spit instead of Uncle Jim, if you want.
Yes.
Alfred nods, then looks thoughtful.
I could, but, it's not very polite for a young girl.
Ain't it?
Alfred walks towards a postbox a short distance from the inn. He takes out a bundle of letters. Alfred starts to post the letters one by one. He drops one, and as he bends down to pick it up, a tall, dark-haired man appears. He stands close to Alfred.
Not Jim by any chance.
You listen. And listen good. You got to bloody well shift. All right? The Potwell is my patch. You hear me? You've got to clear out.
Alfred looks at Jim with unconvincing bravado.
What have I done?
Then I'll make a mess of you. I'll kick you ugly and cut your liver out. You'll cry to see yourself. It don't matter to me if I kill you. I just don't give a dead rat one way or the other.
Take your hat off when you're talking to me.
He throws Alfred's cap away. Well,
tomorrow, see? And if I finds you...
Jim slowly brings his fist up towards Alfred's chin. Alfred closes his eyes, petrified. Later, Alfred hurries along a path, his poacher-style bag slung over his shoulder.
Chap, finished.
He looks back.
Trouble. I don't want no trouble.
Alfred walks along, talking to himself.
What's her game? Dragging me into a quarrel that don't concern me. It's not my bloody business.
He stops and looks upwards.
Oh, if I had a chance against him.
Alfred turns back and punches the air, then shakes his head. Alfred walks on, then turns back. He stops and leans against a tree, perturbed. At the inn, broken glass covers the floor and chairs have been overturned. Nan looks up as Alfred walks in.
You've come back. I thought you were gone for good.
That makes two of us. Where's little Polly?
She's locked in a room upstairs.
Alfred looks through the door.
Where is he?
He's mad drunk. He'll kill you.
There's worse things than being dead. I could be in Fishbourne.
He psychs himself up.
I'm going out there. Don't try to stop me.
I wasn't.
He stares at her.
Right then.
Alfred hesitates for a moment, then hangs his jacket on a hook near the door. He walks outside and looks at Jim, who's sitting under the marquee supping a glass of beer, his feet on a table. Jim turns round and glares at Alfred, who rubs a hand across his chin nervously. Alfred raises his arms in a resigned gesture, then walks over to a shelf and picks up a bottle. Jim kicks the table over, a scowl on his face. The other patrons hastily leave. Nan and Polly stand in the doorway and watch as Alfred strides over to Jim. He holds up the bottle.
Now look here.
I told you to scoot.
As Jim stands up, Alfred hits him over the head with the bottle. Jim sways woozily in his seat.
Bottles.
Jim stands up.
Show your bottles.
Alfred walks backwards as Jim picks up a bottle off a nearby table. Frightened, Nan covers Polly's eyes with her hand. Jim walks towards Alfred, blood streaming down his face. He breaks the bottle against a barrel. Alfred picks up a pole and swings it. Jim grabs the end of it and swipes at Alfred with the broken bottle. Alfred falls to the ground.
I'll teach you to stray on my patch.
Jim walks over to the pond.
It'll be the last lesson you'll ever learn. Yeah? It's deep enough to drown a little rat like you, I reckon.
Let me up, old chap. You've had your fun.
Pom, I ain't even got started.
Oh, Jim!
You keep out of it!
No, it's not.
I'll get to you in a minute.
There's no point in getting yourself hung over a minor dispute.
Scared of the rope. Oh, come on!
Let me go and I'll scoot quick as you like.
Say please.
Please.
Say it again.
Please.
Say it louder.
Please.
Again, louder.
Please.
Say it again.
Please.
Louder.
Please.
Nah. You've had your chance.
No, no, God, help me. Please. Please, God, no. No, no. No, please.
Jim drags Alfred towards the pond. Jim turns round to see a policeman on a bicycle.
Anything wrong here, Nancy?
Shaken, Nan looks over at Jim.
Just a bit of innocent horseplay, Mr. Blake.
Jim ruffles Alfred's hair playfully as he gets up.
I thought as much. Best be on your way, then.
Jim walks off, scowling.
This ain't finished.
Alfred watches Jim as he walks towards the plank bridge. Jim pauses on the bridge and looks across at Alfred. He does a cutting gesture across his face, then walks on. Trembling, Alfred quickly walks back towards the inn. Nan's waiting for him by the door.
Oh, you hurt you.
She dabs at his ear.
You ran away.
No, I was just, I was leading him on.
You were frightened.
Frightened? I wasn't frightened. It was a trick. It was a trick. I was just about to knock him down.
Polly stands up and walks off upstairs. Alfred turns and looks at an anxious Nan.
He'll be back.
They look at each other miserably. Patrons enjoy a drink outside the inn. Inside, Alfred puts down a wooden tray of cutlery onto the bar. He takes out a fork and looks at it with a frown, then takes out a table knife. He puts it back and takes out a cleaver. Nan walks up behind Alfred and looks at him curiously as he studies the large blade. She walks past him, lifts up the counter, then hurries off upstairs without looking at him. Alfred puts the cleaver back down on the bar, then picks it up again and looks at it thoughtfully. A man walks across the plank bridge. Nan stands behind the bar drying glasses. A group of men sit at a table, listening to a man singing and strumming a ukulele. The figure walks into the inn and steps slowly towards the ukulele-playing man. It's Jim. He slams an eel down on the table.
He ain't here!
Where's that dirty little mongrel? Where's he hiding?
Alfred's outside collecting eggs. Inside.
And you a nice gentleman, eh?
He takes the ukulele.
Restrain yourself, my good man.
Jim grabs the ukulele man.
Who the bloody hell are you to call me your man, eh?
The bespectacled man stands up and hurries out. Jim pulls a face at the woman sitting next to him. Outside.
Sorry to interrupt, only there's a chap in there seems to want someone.
Yeah, that would be me, Horace.
Oh. He appears to have brought you a present of fish.
Fish?
I wish he'd ask him to go away. His language isn't quite the thing.
Alfred stands in the doorway and points at Jim.
Down, Jim.
Jim slaps Alfred in the face with the eel.
Sorry.
The woman jumps on Jim's back. Horace, Alfred and Nan watch as the other men in the pub join in and restrain him. Nan walks forwards as Jim struggles with the men. Jim pushes towards the door. He turns to Alfred.
Dead! Do you hear me? Dead. Next time you go to sleep, you'll wake up with your throat slit.
Jim starts to walk away, then turns back and steps threateningly towards the patrons. He spits at their feet. Inside, Alfred kisses Nan on the cheek. She gazes at him for a moment, then grabs him and kisses him full on the lips. She pulls away.
Jim won't stop. He'll never stop.
He'll stop. Believe me. He'll stop.
He walks over to the door.
I'll make him. I'll get killed. I'll get killed.
He loads a shotgun.
Gets killed. I get hung. It just don't seem fair somehow.
Now standing outside, Alfred spins his cap around on his head so that the peak is facing backwards, then aims the gun at a set of bottles lined up on a barrel. He misses them all. He sighs miserably. Later, inside the inn...
Maybe he won't come back this time.
Alfred walks towards her.
I always hoped he'd change, but he never did. He can't change.
He could if he wanted to.
They lay their lunch on the table.
It doesn't please you. You can change it. Choose a new life.
Alfred grabs some cutlery and takes it over to the table, then sits down opposite her. He suddenly grimaces in pain.
It's funny, I haven't fought on it for months.
What's that?
Indigestion. Gives a man a bitter sort of outlook. Or is it a bit of life that injures him elementarily?
Well, we got milk and magnesia.
No, no. I don't need it. I haven't needed it since...
His face falls. Alfred stands up and faces Nan.
Cure was staring me in the eye all the time and I never saw it.
She touches his face.
He needed a good doctor.
The type of medicine I'm talking about doesn't come from a bottle.
Another day. Alfred is collecting logs. He walks through the wood and puts a couple more branches into the large wicker basket he's carrying. Alfred walks on. He pauses and sees the remains of a campfire up ahead, smoke rising from the smouldering ashes. Several beer bottles and some uneaten bread lie nearby. Alfred glances around in concern. He turns and hurries back the way he came. Alfred removes a plank from across the stream.
Not for my sake.
A man has to stick it something.
Alfred walks over the remaining planks, crouches down, and begins to pull up a second. It splashes into the stream as he drags it back towards the bank. Later, Alfred stands outside the inn and takes off his jacket. He drapes it over the back of a chair, then picks up his shotgun. Alfred looks around, then sits down and loads a shell into the barrel. He gazes out across the garden, then holds the gun up and looks at it apprehensively. Alfred sits outside the inn and stares up at a constellation of stars in the night sky. The shotgun rests across his lap, his hands placed firmly in position, ready to fire as necessary. Jim moves quickly through the vegetable patch. Alfred has fallen asleep in his chair. Jim walks slowly towards him. Jim reaches out and takes hold of the gun. He carefully pulls it out of Alfred's loose grasp, then gently strokes a hand across Alfred's chin and nose. Alfred stirs, then opens his eyes. Seeing the gun pointing at him, he jumps and begins to run. Alfred falls to the ground as Jim shoots him in the back. Frightened, Nan runs down the stairs. Jim lowers the gun, then walks over to the chair and picks up Alfred's jacket.
You won't be needing this anymore. Hey!
He puts the jacket on, then heads inside.
Come out! Come out, wherever you are! Uncle Jim's home! Come out! Come out here!
Outside, Alfred pushes open the gate to the chicken coop and crawls inside. He closes the gate behind him and tries to stand up. He falls back to his knees and crawls across the straw.
Oh, blimey, Polly. What have you gone and done now?
Come on! I'm going to torment you!
Polly runs to the top of the stairs. Nan appears behind her and pulls her back again. Swigging a bottle of beer, Jim walks back outside. His smug expression disappears when he sees that Alfred has disappeared. He picks up the shotgun. Jim checks the barrel, then slings the gun over his shoulder and strides across the yard. Alfred's slumped against the coop. Jim grins as he walks towards him.
Come on out, you little weevil!
Jim kicks the gate open and walks in. He points the gun at Alfred.
I'm not afraid anymore.
Of course you are. Everyone is.
There's harder things in dying. Never living properly at all. It's worse.
And you're gonna beg for mercy then? Hey? Like before? Beg!
Alfred shakes his head.
All right.
Jim's smile fades, his face filled with hatred.
You asked for it.
Jim takes the safety catch off and points the gun. Alfred's face is screwed up in pain. Blood runs down his cheek from a gash on his temple. The shotgun lies on the ground, having backfired, its barrel blown to pieces. Jim lies nearby, struggling to get up, his face bloody.
Oh,
Alfred stares in shock. He passes out.
Miriam?
Who's Miriam?
Nan, Blake and Polly surround Alfred.
No, Miriam here. You understand?
He nods.
We thought you was dead.
So I looked it.
He smiles at Nan.
It's only grazed him.
Oh, where's Jim? I left him in the yard. The gun blew up in his face.
We found the rifle. No sign of Jim, though. Don't worry. We'll see to him.
Alfred smiles, his arm around Polly, who's snuggled up beside him. An inebriated Jim, a beer bottle in one hand, walks across the damp sand on a beach. He takes a swig from his bottle, then holds it up in front of him. It's empty. Waves lap gently against the shore. Jim walks towards the water and throws the bottle into the sea, falling over in the process. He pushes himself onto his elbows and sits up, dazed. Jim squints in the sunlight. Then both eyes close and he falls back onto the sand, asleep. 3 years later, Alfred sits beside a glowing fire with Nan. Polly lies awake on her lap, and Slipper the dog sits on Alfred's lap.
Her again, aren't you?
Who?
You know who. You've been thinking of her a lot lately.
If I was thinking of a certain party, and I won't say I was.
He strokes Slipper. Nan fondles Polly's hair.
I didn't treat her well. I might be thinking what I did to her was mean. And she might be sad or lonely or desperate because of it. I might be thinking all that if I was thinking anything at all.
Nan looks pensive.
Damn. Why now?
He looks across at Polly fondly.
I'm happy.
Nan smiles in the firelight.
Maybe I don't deserve to be. She hadn't crossed my mind until recently, and now she won't go away.
Not like Jim. He went away. I often wonder where he got to. I ain't sorry he's gone, though.
You never asked me who she is.
Nan plays with a lock of Polly's hair.
I don't want to know. You loved her, I suppose.
I thought so once, but now I don't know. Would it put you out too much if I went off for a couple of days?
Nan looks into the fire.
I can manage. I'll ask only one thing. Don't do to me what you did to her. If you're not coming back, write and tell me. I wouldn't want to spend the rest of my days wondering if every passing stranger might be you at last.
They sit solemnly, the firelight casting flickering shadows on their faces. In Fishbourne, Alfred's old shop now bears a sign with the names Polly and Larkins emblazoned on it. Another part of the sign reads, Tees. Alfred, wearing a felt hat with the brim pulled down over his eyes, strides down the alleyway between the tea shop and Rumbold's. He looks up at the sign, then over at Rumbold's, where the eponymous owner is bent over outside the shop. Alfred shakes his head. Rumbold rises and turns but doesn't recognise Alfred, who walks into the tea shop. He climbs the now restored stairs and reaches the tea room. There's pretty floral paper on the walls. Alfred stands at the top of the stairs and surveys the scene. He nods approvingly to himself. In a kitchen beyond, Annie is drying cutlery. Standing in the shadows, he calls out.
Can I have tea?
I don't say I can sort out the table.
She comes out into the empty tea room. Alfred sniffs cakes and scones on a stand.
I've been cleaning up. The tea room's a bit upset. Miriam likes a good turnout. Is her way.
Pauline Larkin? And use your name?
I'm Larkin. My sister married Mr. Polly. She's a widow now, though. Has been these past 3 years.
Widow?
He was found drowned in the Medway. My poor sister wouldn't have known him if it hadn't been for the name sewn in his clothes. All white and eaten away he was.
Well, there must have been an inquest.
Yeah, of course. He drowned, that's all.
You sure it was him?
Where else could it have been? In the very clothes he wore?
Alfred, looking stunned and still with his hat pulled down low, sits at a table in the shadows of the small tea room.
Must have been a shock to your sister.
She's not the type to give up. Of course, she had the life insurance.
Suppose she did.
And we started the tea rooms with it. I got to get some milk.
Dissolute type, was he, this Polly?
Not dissolute, exactly. He was a very wearing sort of husband. Feeble's the word. Weak. Weak as water.
Not as weak as you think, Annie.
What was that?
I said me tea, I don't like it weak.
The doorbell sounds as Annie heads downstairs.
Customer. Sorry about the mess. I'll soon have it cleared up.
Nice sort of day, isn't it, Miriam?
She freezes. Alfred removes his hat. She turns to look at him. She looks alarmed.
No, it isn't. He just looks like me.
I knew all along that drowned man wasn't you. I tried to think it was. I tried to think the water perhaps had altered your wrists and your feet and the colour of your hair. I was always afraid you'd come back. How we'll repay the insurance, I don't know.
No, Miriam, listen. I haven't come back. I'm not coming back. Think of me as a visitor from another world.
You're not coming back?
How can I? When I'm dead. Look, you shut up about me, and I'll shut up about myself. I only came back because I thought you might be hard up and in trouble. I thought you might be unhappy. And that things weren't finished between us, but now I see how things are. I'm satisfied.
She nods. He puts his hat back on.
I'm gonna absquatulate, see? Hey, presto. Back into thin air. I don't think you're ever going to see me again, because you ain't. And we'd both be happier for it.
He touches the brim of his hat in farewell, then pulls it lower over his eyes and goes downstairs.
The shop's some fancy about a ghost.
Quite tell, quite. Well, he's a rum one, isn't he?
Annie returns and knocks a bucket and mop as she heads into the kitchen. Alfred leaves. Glancing up at the Polly and Larkin's tea room sign, he walks off swiftly down the alleyway. He looks back for a long moment, then disappears round the corner. Alfred walks across the narrow plank bridge and stares across the water and greenery to the Potwell Inn. He removes his hat and, with an expression brimming with happiness, continues across the bridge. Nan and Polly are at the open door of the inn as he walks up and stands before them.
You come back?
I have.
Will you be staying?
If it suits.
Do you find any reason why you shouldn't?
None at all.
Nan smiles gently and offers her hand, which he takes. He fixes her with a long and adoring look, then steps into the inn. Tall, leafy trees are silhouetted against a golden evening sky. Alfred is outside in the garden with Polly.
Where am I, my mother?
Not Mary. As good as.
You didn't scoot.
No. I won't scoot now. Not ever.
Little Polly reaches up to kiss his cheek. Then she spits.
Taught myself.
She gives him a smug look. Alfred affectionately flicks her lacy bonnet then walks back to the inn where Nan is sitting at a trestle table outside and has been watching them. Alfred sits across the table from Nan on a bench seat, his back to her. They look out at Polly skipping back and forth on the bank of the stream. Alfred looks up into space.
I set fire to an house once. I don't feel sorry for it. Nearly killed myself with a razor. Who hasn't? Or at least got as far as thinking about it.
He closes his eyes and smiles.
My life, I was half dreaming. I never really planned it or set out to live. Things just happened. It's the same with everyone.
Nan listens patiently. He turns to her.
Buried in a dream. I lived in a dream.
Nan smiles at him gently.
I'm awake now, though.
He moves to sit beside her. Nan hooks her arm through his and holds his hands.
Lord, look at him.
A fiery sunset.
I don't deserve an evening like this.
They stare up at the golden and pink clouds.
I don't see that it does you any good looking at sunsets. They don't help you.
Who cares?
They don't last. You've got to die someday.
They continue to gaze ahead.
Yeah, but we're here now, and that's what counts. And whenever there's signs of a good sunset, I'll come and I'll sit out here.
A silver sky against tall, leafy trees in silhouette. Nan nods. He puts his arm around her.
We can't sit out here forever.
He rests his cheek against hers. Nan smiles. The sunset fades to black. ITFC audio description.